There's a mental state that elite athletes know well. Those moments when you're performing at the peak of your ability and everything clicks. Your inner narrator goes silent. You feel completely immersed and absorbed in what you're doing. Time disappears. Those are called flow states. And you've probably had them, but maybe not for a while.
The funny thing is about those experiences is that for most of us, they happen accidentally. They happen occasionally. They might have happened a lot when we were children or a lot when we were athletes playing team sports. But as our lives change and get more complicated, they either just diminish in our lives or we just kind of fly blind looking for them, you know, sort of nearest the last place we found one.
Jamie Wheel is an expert on peak performance. He's helped everyone from Navy SEALs to NFL, NBA, and Major League athletes achieve flow states. And he says neuroscientists have finally figured out how to hack the brain so any of us can do it.
We can do a literal end run around our waking conscious selves. You don't have to use your waking conscious self to try and get rid of it. It doesn't work. It's like trying to hide your own Easter eggs, you know. But what you can do is you can say, hey, I'm going to calibrate my breathing, my brain waves, my heart rate, my posture, and a host of other neurophysiological factors. And that's what we're saying is game changing.
So the psychologist who, as far as I know, first began writing about flow is Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. And since then, it's been studied a lot. What would surprise people to know about it today?
That's a great question. I mean, I think one of the things that's exciting is that it's no longer just a psychological study. So when Csikszentmihalyi first started, I mean, there wasn't real-time brain scanning. There wasn't the ability to check neurotransmitters in a system. There wasn't the ability to see what was happening under the hood. So all he had really had to go on was psychological subjective self-reporting. And they literally had little pagers, you know, buzzing in people's pockets. So someone would maybe be in a flow state where they were losing track of themselves and then bzzz, and then, you know, the little text thing would be like, on a scale of 1 to 5, how flowy do you feel right now? Which obviously, right, kind of defeats the point. You're like, well, I was there. Now I'm not. Thanks. Now how do I get back?
Can you actually break this flow state down in terms of specific biochemicals, neurochemicals that need to come online?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. You know, we can first start with what it isn't. And what it isn't is 21st century normal. That tired, wired, stressed experience. And what that looks like as far as the neurobiology, if we're talking right now, anybody listening, we're probably in a beta brainwave state. That's a relatively fast brainwave state. It is particularly, you know, it's correlated with activity in the prefrontal cortex, which is the front part, the complex part of our brain that houses most of our sense of self, our sense of executive function, delayed gratification, long-term decision-making, abstract planning, all that kind of stuff. So that stuff's up and running at full speed, humming along with beta waves. And the tired, wired, and stressed part, you know, we're not dodging saber-toothed tigers these days, right? So our stress response, which is a lot of norepinephrine and cortisol, right, those are super helpful for sudden, sharp, fight or flight, you know, moments. Mm-hmm. But they're terrible for us to just have them on 24/7. There we are in traffic, rehashing a conversation we wish we had with our boss. I have phantom phone buzzing in my pocket. Ooh, was that a new update? What was that? Mm-hmm. Right? Those kind of moments eat us alive. So that's normal.
And these, that sounds horrible.
Isn't it? You're like, how do we do anything? So then you say, you realize, okay, so ecstasis, these states that take us outside ourselves, that's just the old ancient Greek literal definition of it. That signature shifts in every single way. So our brain waves tend to slow down from beta to alpha and even theta. And those are much slower, more contemplative, relaxed, almost sometimes even dreamy or hypnagogic states, those kind of states in between waking and sleeping. Our brain activity, the network that basically supports and creates our sense of self-awareness, some of those nodes power down, and as a result, that inner critic and the self-awareness tends to go offline. The stress chemicals get flooded out. So nitric oxide quits a neurotransmitter and it kind of pushes through our system and flushes out those stress chemicals, and in come dopamine, endorphins, and anandamide.
These are all the pleasure chemicals that the body can produce. So is the shorthand version of everything you're saying just do stuff that makes you feel good? Because on the other hand, if I did that, I might just sit around at home with giant cartons of ice cream.
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, it's in some respects, it's sort of like hashtag do the obvious. Sleep more, move often, eat well, be grateful, get outside, I mean, none of this stuff is mysterious. It's just, do we give ourselves permission in the pell-mell of the day-to-day to actually say, no, this stuff matters?
I know I should do all of those things. We all know we should do all those things. Honestly, pick up a, you know, People magazine or Redbook or something, and they all tell us we should do all of those things, and a lot of us try.
You know, A, this stuff sounds so obvious that we can just kind of forget it and not do it, and B, how would we give ourselves permission to what might otherwise seem self-indulgent? I actually shouldn't be working 70-hour weeks and bragging about them. I should go home after 50, because that's what all the research shows is the massive drop-off in performance. I shouldn't tell myself I'm too busy to have a full breakfast or take a shower standing up. I should take a long, hot bath. I shouldn't ignore my primary relationships and my spouse and my children. If I take the time, the performance gains from doing these things are anywhere from 200% to 490%.
So part of what you're prescribing here is common sense, and you know, you make a great point that we know what we should do, we just don't do it. But you should tell the story. There's a story you tell in the book about how Navy SEALs are using, basically are figuring out how to deliberately induce this flow state in order to get small teams to develop this kind of hive mind. Tell us what the SEALs are doing.
Well, we were privileged enough to have the chance to observe DevGroup, or what is sort of commonly known as SEAL Team 6, got to spend some time with them and see how they learn and operate. And beyond all of the, you know, heroic physical and tactical things that they train for, the key thing that their commanders are looking for is, can one of their SEALs, with chaotic conditions all around them, which direction does he go? Does he merge with his teammates? And do they create a shared real-time decision-making and action collective? Flipping the switch is what their commander called it.
What does that even mean?
The technical term that the SEALs use is dynamic subordination. And what it means is, regardless of rank and regardless of whatever they planned before they actually dropped out of the helicopter to go on the mission, whoever knows what to do next is in charge. They take the lead. So they're offloading elements that would have been a rational, separate individual would have to handle all by themselves. And they're trusting each other. And that trust isn't just awarded, it's earned. It's earned every single day.
I guess I'm not entirely sure what you mean. They're not stopping to say, okay, who thinks we should go right and who thinks we should go left?
Well, no, I mean, that stuff's out the window. Yeah, it's not different than, you know, Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, right? I mean, or any amazing sports team, or even what the Patriots did in the Super Bowl, right? And we clearly know it when we see it. You know, and we pay dearly to be in the presence of it. And that experience, by the way, is, you know, for any of us to get to experience, and it can be as simple as singing in a church choir together. It could be line dancing on a Saturday night, you know, here in Austin at the Broken Spoke, right? It could be any of these moments where we just set aside our fragmented sense of ourselves and we do something greater together. That's usually pretty intoxicating.
You also talk about people who are experimenting with more active ways of hacking our way to these high-performance states. For instance, when you quote Tim Ferriss in your book saying something extraordinary. He says, the billionaires I know, almost without exception, use hallucinogens on a regular basis. So it sounds like there actually are some chemical cocktails that can also help us get to this state you're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. Off-label, this is exactly what is happening in Silicon Valley. And, you know, we talk about the Music and Arts Festival of Burning Man as an example, which, you know, the coverage of that event is almost always salacious. You know, it's sort of, oh, naked hippies doing drugs in the desert. Or it's kind of celebrity hounding. Oh, look, there's Katy Perry or P. Diddy on a Segway. You know, but no one's actually asking the question, why does Silicon Valley basically shut down? I mean, there's articles in the San Francisco Chronicle about now this is the week you can actually get a reservation at that restaurant you've been always trying to get into because the place is just a ghost town. The question is why? And what is happening is that, yeah, these Silicon Valley leaders and executives are absolutely using non-ordinary states of consciousness to innovate faster and to come back and seed their businesses and their next technological developments and breakthroughs.
Wow. So if I want to come up with the next great public radio show, if I dropped some microdoses of acid, would I get there?
Well, I mean, James Vadiman, who did research at Hewlett-Packard and Stanford back in the 60s before the research was shut down and has now revived that, the answer from those studies would be quite possibly. He did studies with a ton of Silicon Valley engineers. The criteria for being part of the study was you had to have been working on a hard technical problem for at least 6 months and having no success solving it. And when they did, and they did sub-perceptual doses of, I believe it was LSD and mescaline, those guys had something like 10 to 12 meaningful breakthroughs, meaning patentable, meaning deployable and fundable, you know, breakthroughs in their work and insights. And that's part of what we're talking about with this revolution. You know, meditation used to be the domain solely of kind of seekers and saints. And flow states were sort of artists and athletes. And psychedelics were hippies and ravers. And none of those communities of practice would recognize each other, would talk to each other, would acknowledge they were doing similar or the same things. And what we see once we take a look at the neurobiology is we're like, oh, let's just move into cognitive literacy. Let's take responsibility for our decisions and our choices in this domain, and let's be a lot more skillful, a lot healthier, and a lot more productive with what we all choose to do together.
Jamie, thanks.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Jamie Wheel is the author with Steve Kotler of Stealing Fire: How Silicon Valley, the Navy SEALs, and Maverick Scientists Are Revolutionizing the Way We Live and Work.